Venus, the goddess of beauty and love, arose from the froth that swam on the sea. Minerva sprang out of the cranium of Jove, a coisalan dame, as most mortals agree. But Bacchus, they tell us, that prince of good fellows, was Jupiter's son. Pray attend to my tale. Yet they who thus chatter mistake quite the matter. He sprang from a barrel of Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. Bishops and curates, priests, deacons and vicars, when once you have tasted, you all must agree that Nottingham ale is the best of all liquors, and none understands a good crater like thee. It dispels every vapor, saves pen, ink and paper, for when you've a mind in your pulpit to rail, it'll open your throats, you may preach without notes, when inspired with a bumper of Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. The Helicon Brook, the nectar of gods and the juice of the vine. You say none can write well except they invoke the friendly assistance of one of the nine. This liquor surpasses the streams of Parnassus, that nectar ambrosia on which gods regale. Experience will show it, not makes a good poet, like quantum sufficiency of Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. And you doctors who more executions have done, with powder and potion and bolus and pill, than hangman with halter or soldier with gun, miser with famine or lawyer with quill. To dispatch us the quicker, you forbid us malt liquor, till our bodies consume and our faces grow pale. Let him mind you who pleases, what cures all diseases, a plentiful glass of good Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale. Nottingham ale, boys, Nottingham ale. No liquor on earth is like Nottingham ale.
Thank you. and fear no harm, for here's good liquor, keep it warm.
And drink and be merry, merry boys, the tall delight in Ireland's joys. To Ireland now the day is come, about the May Maple tinker on.
Nectar is the thing assigned by the deity's own mind, to cure the heart oppressed with grief, and of good liquors is the chief.
Then drink and be merry, merry boys, they all delight in Hymen's joys. To Hymen now the day is come, about the merry maple tinker-o.
Give to the melancholy man a cup or two off now and then. His physic will soon revive his mood, and make him be a merrier mood.
And drink and be merry, merry boys, they all delight in Hymen's joys. To Hymen now the day is come, about the merry maple tinker-o.
Give to the nymph that's free from scorn, no Irish stuff, nor Scotch or worn, lasses in beaver coats come away. You're welcome to us night and day.
And drink and be merry, merry boys, let all delight in Hymen's joys. To Hymen now the day is come, about the merry maple tinker-o. And drink and be merry, merry boys, let all delight in Hymen's joys. To Hymen now the day is come, about the merry maple tinker-o.
Greetings, everybody. Good morning. I'm Laura Gilbert, and I am the co-artistic founder of and co-director of Electric Earth Concerts here in Peterborough, New Hampshire, and I'm your moderator for today. I'm pleased to welcome you to the Lyceum with today's guest speaker, Hans Kodo Araki. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the musicians today, Seven Times Salt, for their recording. And I just want to note that we heard some beautiful Sopranino recorder playing, and Hans is going to augment that with a lower, more mellow version of a wind instrument very soon. Electric Earth Concerts is actually sponsoring, and we're really honored to be sponsoring the event today. Hans is a beautiful player, and I myself am a flutist, so I have a special pride in being able to present this. Hans is actually playing with Alden Robinson, a violinist, at 4 o'clock today at the First Church in Jaffrey. Right now, we don't really have too many tickets, but we are going to record. We're going to play it outside if anybody feels like coming and bringing their July 4th celebration to the green at Jaffrey Center. For many years, the Monadnock Lyceum has brought outstanding world-class speakers to the region to serve as catalysts to inform, engage, and inspire an active citizenry on local, national, and global issues. The Monadnock Summer Lyceum is supported primarily through contributions from our audience. We deeply appreciate your donations, which this year may be made on our website or by mailing your donation. During this challenging time, we need your help more than ever. Today's talk is being recorded and will soon be available as a podcast and as a video on our website, monadnocklyceum.org. The talk will also be rebroadcast on WUML 91.5 next Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. and next Sunday at 3 p.m. and on WSMN 95.3 next Sunday at 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. As is the tradition of the Lyceum, after the presentation, our speaker will answer questions from the audience. Hans is going to start with his performance without speaking. Please submit your questions by using the live comment section on Facebook or YouTube, or send them to our email at monlyceum@gmail.com. After the broadcast, you may provide feedback on today's program, suggestions for next summer's speakers, or join our mailing list through our website. So, Hans, I had a wonderful conversation a couple of weeks ago, thanks to Zoom, with Hans, and we talked about all kinds of things. I have always been a kind of... I love the shakuhachi. My children were actually born to shakuhachi music. And through the years, I've really tried hard to learn about those sounds to play music for modern flute that's based on those sounds. So I have a huge appreciation for it. And I can say that what he is doing is just amazing. He's such a beautiful player. And it's not surprising that he is, because he's the sixth generation shakuhachi player. And so it truly is in his blood, in his gene line. He just told me actually something that I wanted to share, which is that the instrument that he is playing now, which he actually had to find and purchase, was made by his great-great-grandfather in 1903 when his great-great-grandfather was 82 years old. So he's not only part of the tradition as his playing goes, but he's playing one of his family's instruments. So you can read Hans's bio and hear all about his heritage with the shakuhachi. But I was really interested in the fact that he played piano for a little bit when he was a kid, and then he tried the flute, but he really hated the idea of reading music and struggled with it. And so he kind of put aside musical things. And then at age 17, he picked up the shakuhachi and started playing. And he swears to me that when he picked it up the first time, he sounds the way he sounds now. So that's pretty amazing testimonial to, I guess, both his bloodline and also the fact that if we're surrounded by music and surrounded by that aesthetic, and if we really feel it in our body and in our bones, then it's there. It's there at our disposal. And a very gifted person like Hans can access it so quickly. And he also told me that when he has heard recordings of him and his father together, the only difference that he can tell is that his father had tuberculosis. Is that right, Hans? Yeah. As a child. And so he hears a little bit in the breathing, but that's it. That's the only other thing. Before I hand this over to Hans, I just wanted to say one more thing, which is that we are sitting in the same room. We're about, I don't know, maybe 15 feet apart right now. And I think this will probably be the first time. And we also have one other person here in the room with us. Hans is actually going to give a performance for people breathing in the same room with him. And that's a very exciting thing. And we're thrilled that we can be together in the same space again. So Here we go, Hans. Take it away.
Thank you. Oh. Well, thank you very much. I decided to start this talk with a bit of music just to bring it a bit of context. It makes a little bit more sense when trying to describe these sort of vague terminology, to have a bit of context, to actually hear some of the music, what I'm playing. So my name is Hanzaburo Kodo Araki. I'm the sixth, well, the fifth in my family, the sixth person to have the name Kodo. My great-great-grandfather, after whom I was named and who made this particular shakuhachi, was also called Hanzaburo, and he was Kodo the second. So what we're talking about today is Kinkoryu Shakuhachi, which is the sort of the school of playing that I come from, that my fathers all played. And Kurosawa Kinko was a samurai that became a monk at the age of 19 and began traveling all over Japan and collecting pieces of music, and eventually collecting a repertoire that is, it includes not only pieces that were fundamental to a particular kind of meditation and sort of a religious practice of Zen Buddhism. Interestingly, the history, the ancient history of the shakuhachi is very much subjective, shall we say. There aren't great concrete bits of evidence. There's a lot of debate over when the shakuhachi came to Japan. There isn't any debate that it came from China. It's just when is very much open for debate. A lot of the documents that were written that talk about this ancient history were actually written later and backdated, or one of the most famous ones that most people base a lot of their knowledge on the history of shakuhachi is called the Kyotaku Denki Kokujikai, which is the, literally, it's the translation of the history of shakuhachi from Chinese. However, no one has ever found the original document in Chinese, so there's some question as to whether or not any of the information in there is based on anything actually historically accurate. And in fact, the way that it reads is very much more sort of mythological. And so how much stock you want to put in that is entirely up to you. But like I said, what my family has done for five generations now is to play Kinko style, Kinko Ryu Shakuhachi. So that at least we have that much information, which goes back to Kurosawa Kinko died in 1771, so 250 years ago. So, it's like I said, these specific pieces that were collected that we play in this repertoire, that it forms half of what really is now all of Kinkoryu, the solo shakuhachi music, which you just heard. That piece was called Hifumi Hachigayashi, which means, well, literally means 1, 2, 3, and passing the bowl for alms. So it's a piece for played for by monks to beg. And what the music looks like is basically just a chart. It's very, 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 very loosely written out. So it's read from this side, top to the bottom, right to left. And each one of these characters is a note. It's like writing A, B, C, D, F, G. But any of the embellishments, any of the subtle changes that you would do to your fingering aren't generally written in unless they fall outside of a couple of rules. There are very, very, very few rules in shakuhachi music, but if, you know, say for example, so the root note with everything closed, the tonic is closest to D, what we would call D, but it's called ro. Ro. This note is tsu, this note is re, this note is chi, this note is ri. And then there is a fifth hole here, which you open that. Technically it's hi. And then there's all kinds of three quarters covering that you do, or half, or on all of these notes. And so any of those things are, they have to be taught, which is why it's really difficult to interpret pieces that weren't handed down through this oral tradition. So this piece, Hifumi Hachigaeshi, actually has in its original form, that's obviously just a copy. So this was, all these pieces here are, musicians would write these pieces down by hand. And so this is my grandfather's book. And this is what his original looks like. But as you can see, it's quite a bit longer. So there's an entire section in the middle that no one's played for 100 years that we just skip. And I wouldn't have the slightest idea how to play that, despite the fact that all the notes are there, because of these small embellishments and these small things that haven't been taught. So what I would be playing would be an approximation, a guess, essentially, of what that entire section is supposed to sound like. So again, Hachigaeshi, Hifumi Hachigaeshi is actually, it's in two parts. The very first line, which was in the lower octave, that's Hifumi. That's the first section. And then Hachigaeshi starts with the high note. Towards the end, the very last line, the ending of the piece was actually composed by Kodo II, and was inserted by him, and which kind of, as you listen to all these pieces, all 36 of these pieces, you start to hear a similarity in, specifically in the endings. This piece doesn't follow that same sort of formula, which makes it unusual, and it explains why it sounds so different, because it was added later. But for the most part, none of these pieces have, their composers are unknown. And the reason being that older pieces were given priority. They were considered more important. And so if you actually knew the name of the composer, it was, you would be in danger of dating that piece. And so really the only thing that was, the only importance that was placed was who you learned it from. And that is why we don't have the names of composers. The only other piece in this entire collection is a piece of my great-great-grandfather's that is the only one that's been added into the canon in 200 years. So later on, as I said, Kurosawa Kenko he wandered Japan collecting these pieces of music and learning them. But he also had a love for other forms of music other than these specific religious pieces. And so he also added into this canon pieces that are called sugagaki pieces, which is music that was taken from the string players of the time. So the shamisen, which is like it looks like a banjo, and it's played with a large plectrum, and it's three strings and great big tuning pegs. he transposed those pieces to Shakuhachi and added them into the canon. As well as one other piece that I believe I'll be playing later this afternoon, called Kumoijishi, which is a sort of a festival piece. It's a little bit more. These pieces can be distinguished, actually all of them, by their slightly more rhythmic approach. That is to say, the Sugakaki pieces. So the Honkyoku pieces, like what I started with here, the Hifumi Hachigaishi, the sense of timing and rhythm is very much, it's very loose and very open to interpretation. There is a, it's a general guide, but we wouldn't add any indication of how long a note is. Again, it's through the transmission from your teacher that you would understand how long to hold this particular note, or whether or not to cut it a little bit short, or anything like that. I mentioned that this whole body of work, these pieces that we call Honkyoku, which originally meant just the religious pieces, only these meditative pieces of music that were collected and played in this sort of religious atmosphere. There's an entire other body of music, which is ensemble music, called Sankyoku. And that, again, this was something that was added much later by my great-great-grandfather, because he had not only a love of the sort of what would have been at that time modern music. Shakuhachi was actually technically forbidden from being played with other instruments. It could only be played solo. So he and another musician, a shamisen player, worked kind of tirelessly to arrange this music for the koto, which is kind of a harp, like a zither, shamisen and shakuhachi and voice. And with that came the introduction of a method of writing down rhythm, and not necessarily like time signatures, but because again, it's not so much that there's a certain pulse to some of the tempo and the approach to playing it. And with Sankyoku, the most important element now becomes the voice, and all the instruments follow the voice and the singer, and the singer will dictate the overall sort of pace and lilt and flow of the piece, and everyone else just follows. So I'm just going to hold this one up just because it's short. this is called Kurokami, and unfortunately, I guess we can't really see it, but this is, you'll see these are the notes here. And off to the side are these little dots. And what you do is you follow these dots, just like you're watching the head of a metronome. And so if there's one dot there, that's a whole beat. And then, so this would be Hado Tsujo Di Uje. And you're going back and forth like this, which is, as a shakuhachi player, there aren't many things that I would call bad habits, but something that was beaten out of me was not actually following that dot along as you play. So not doing that. That's a big no-no. But that's how we know how long each note is by following this dot that's to either side of the note as it's written. And so in a lesson format, what at least my father would do is he would hit his right and left hand to correspond with those dots. And that would hopefully keep me from following along with the dot, which is, like I said, is a big no-no. So anyway, I will take this here and make a little bit bigger versions. Of what these notes look like. So, like I said, the name of the what we call each note is do tsu de chi di hi and ha and u. Those are the basic notes. So, this is what ro looks like. Ro, and this is tsu. And this is re. These characters are actually letters of the Japanese alphabet. There's three alphabets in Japanese. There's katakana, hiragana, and kanji. Kanji are the Chinese characters. And these are like more of a simplified alphabet. So we have ro, tsu, re. And chi. Ri. And this is hi, ha, and u. So those are like all the root notes without any sort of adjusting the fingering other than just opening the hole. If we're to sort of flatten that note, it's called meri, which we would write just by writing the character me, which looks like that. So this would be tsu meri, ro meri. Chi meri, sometimes they'll write like that, sometimes they'll write it over here. This only exists in the second octave. Chi meri. Ri meri, hi meri. This also would be most commonly a second octave note, and ha is the same note as ro, just in the third octave. Once you get to the third octave, you don't call it ro anymore; you call it ha. U is one of very few cross-fingered notes, and so we would play that by closing. We number these holes from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So we close 1 and 2, open 3, and that's u. Which, as I said, chi meri is the same tone. And it's because you can't play that same note with that same fingering in the second octave. So you play it as chi meri. Which you can play, and occasionally you do see it because the tone is slightly different. You see chi meri in the first octave. So there's a great deal of that in this music, of playing the same pitch with a different fingering so as to attain a different tone, essentially, like a different color for the same pitch, but it comes across differently. There are, like I said, you can get the beginnings of a third octave, but once you get above ri, we call that the second octave, or just the higher octave. So the first octave is called do, and it looks like that. So that's, sorry, I probably should have written this. Ro, tsu, de, and this is do. That's the lower octave. Higher octave was terrible, sorry, is called kan. That's our second or higher octave, because it does go into a third octave. In the Iraqi school of Kinko Ryu Shakuhachi, we don't have another, we don't have any other terminology outside of this, outside of kan, ryo, meri, or kari, which is the opposite of meri. Like I was saying, meri notes are where you, like this is tsu, tsu meri looks like this, where you're covering the whole, almost entirely. It's like three quarters covered. So it's the difference between and there are other schools that have additional terminology, but we never use them. So that's all I can speak to is the ones that I know, but I know of others, other terms, other things to be said. So let's see. There are a couple questions coming in that I'm seeing here.
Should play something.
Play another piece?
And then in a few minutes we can get to the questions.
Okay, great. Wonderful. I am going to play one of the Sugagaki pieces because it, just to get a sense of what that, it's a subtle difference, but it is noticeable, I think. We are. This is called Sanya Sugagaki, which is the Three Valleys, is the name of the piece. Kind of an ode to. So I am gonna do the big no-no here and and move like this. So you can get a sense of, unfortunately, if we had a second camera here, we could point this and I could have you follow along, but two dots, and like the right side of the note is sort of the strong beat, the lead beat, and the left side would be sort of the weak side. So it starts out here with two dots, and then one dot to the left and one dot to the right, and then another dot to the right. So it sounds like this. So that's sort of an excerpt of Sanya Sugagaki, which is, again, a piece of music that was transposed from shamisen music or stringed instruments. I forgot to mention, so the shakuhachi. Shakuhachi literally means 1.8 shaku and sun, which is the old system of measurement in Japan. So one shaku is about nearly a foot, and one sun is about an inch. So this is about 1.8. So actually, when you say shakuhachi, it's just a unit of measurement. It's the whole title, the whole name of this instrument would be Ishaku Hasun, one shaku and eight sun. The word for bamboo is take. So we don't even actually use the word bamboo in it. But at this point now, even in Japan, the nomenclature is accepted that this is the flute. Shakuhachi is a flute. And regardless of the length, so this is this is what we call a nishaku 2.0. Two shaku is slightly longer. It's a lower tones, obviously. So we would still call this a nishaku. If there's a bunch of instruments going around, then we would call this hasun. Just we'd call it hasun. That's all. But that's what a shakuhachi is. So hopefully we have some questions.
So questions. Thank you, Hans Kodo Araki, for that beautiful playing and explanation. So firstly, I wanted to ask you, before we get to everybody else's questions, I had a couple.
Yeah.
Is it a pentatonic scale?
It is.
Is that okay? Yeah. Could you just actually play us is it one octave or two that you would generally range about in when you're playing?
It's like two and a bit. So it's, again, without any, this wouldn't be necessarily a scale that we would use. So. The highest note that you'll see in any kind of traditional music is, which is a kind of a terrible sound, but it's the same pitch as that. But more of like a traditional Japanese scale, like that we'd find in this music, or that would be more of what we'd actually play. Right? Rarely do you see runs of those kind of whole notes. So
great. And then another question. You're also a beautiful Celtic flutist. And this afternoon, actually, that's a lot of what Hans is going to be doing with Electric Earth. To me, just listening and thinking about the aesthetic, they feel almost opposite each other in a way. When you play the shakuhachi, even when you're playing these transcriptions, It feels very much like your air and yourself is having a dialogue with the instrument. It's very, and I understand that it kind of comes from almost like a religious, it's between you and what's inside of you and what's out there. And that comes across very much in all the playing that you've done. When you're playing, with Alden, you have to be completely out of yourself and using your air and your body and your spirit in a completely different way. And I'm just wondering if you could just talk about that for a second, like just the differences.
Absolutely. So the central philosophy of this as a religious instrument, a religious tool, is the concept of Ichi Onjo Butsu, which it means enlightenment through one sound. And so you're not playing a piece with, these notes strung together. You're playing music where each note itself is its own piece of music. That's sort of the sort of general broad concept behind it. Once you get into Sankyoku music, again, you are following the voice. The voice is the central thing, and everything is sort of in service of that voice, of the story that's being told, of the singer. So that is where it starts to lean a little bit into at least my interpretation of Irish music, which the thing that I loved about it so much was you're right, it is kind of a detachment from self, and it's about the sound that you create together. And that can come, there can be beauty in how closely in unison you play. There can be beauty in how you might diverge because of variations, or a variation, like a momentary, what do you call it? What's the word? When you make something up on the spot. Thank you. Improvisation, yeah, that happens, and that's also beautiful. In Shakuhachi music, there's a surprisingly little improvisation that we do, with the exception possibly of the duration that we play a note. There's very little that's open to interpretation, and it's mostly how you interpret the piece as you learned it. So,
but it also is so incredibly personal, because more than even my flute, it just feels like it's your air that is the voice. Mm-hmm. You know, so it can be written and the pulse can be the same, but there's just everybody's air is so very different that,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that bamboo isn't a wood, it's a grass. The variations just in the diameter, the bore, and it is the craft of making these instruments is they're not machined, so they do have a lot of variance between them. And, we'll all, of course, develop our preference to certain subtle things that we like. We like the tone of, but, subjectively, we can't say that one is, or objectively, better than the other, right? It is very individual. It's very individualized, yeah.
So there are a couple of questions here.
Okay.
There are a lot of comments about how much everybody loves you and thinks that you're carrying on a beautiful tradition, and I agree. Lovely playing. I'm curious to know, this is from Rebecca Miller, to know more about the technique of finger positioning and how that impacts the sound. What does a neutral finger position look like?
So, yeah, that's... I think the best example of it is this note, tsu. Which is that just that first hole open on its own. But a very common note is tsumeri, which again, meri notes you get by covering to some degree and also lowering your head. I believe this is the most difficult note on the entire instrument, actually, because you're compromising in two ways by covering most of the hole and also dropping your head. So what that does, you just naturally to attain that pitch, you sacrifice tone, and that just has to be okay. It's a nice way of letting go. You're never going to get this great big loud sounding sumeti note. It just doesn't exist. But as an interest, you were saying, like, in comparison to silver flute, like, this is such a huge technique. Part of the technique of playing Shakuhachi is the position of your head and the instrument in relation. So this is, again, if we take do, which is sort of the root note, that's a pretty broad scope for without changing any finger position whatsoever. And we used this a lot. And same with, you know, Sumedi, or it's going to be up to the player to find that balance that they can get to comfortably, where maybe this is more open, but you're dropping this further. It's very, very much up to the individual player. Hopefully that answers.
I think it does. How about one more really quick one? I think you addressed this a little bit, but here's the question. How are the lengths of notes distinguished? Half notes from whole notes, for example.
The which note?
The length.
Oh, so that's those, the dots. The dots. Yeah. And again, it's, well, here. If we, hopefully I can do this very quickly. We'll take a piece that, yeah, we'll do that. So, D, D, Do, D, D, Do. So, that's, this is backwards, sorry. Di, di, do. That's how we would write out the beginning of this melody that hopefully many of you would know. So that's Sakura, kind of like a children's song. The other thing that we would see sometimes, if you're, whoever's doing your notation is kind, they'll put in this little triangle here that would indicate a rest. So, di, di, do, rest. And then it would continue, di, di, do. That's our length of notes.
I think it's funny that you struggled with reading, you know, Western notation, and yet... You can
this
grapple
makes perfect
with it.
Sense to me.
Well, thank you so much, Hans. I really enjoyed this so much, and to be in the same room with you and feel your sound in this space is wonderful.
Very much.
Thank you for your barn, Eric Blackmer.
Thank you, Eric.
Next week, I'm going to read exactly what's written here. Thank you for watching, and thank you for your support for our unique 2021 season. Please join us next week to hear Heather Cox Richardson talk about what history can tell us about the present. I know somebody who reads her blog every day of their life. Heather Cox Richardson, the clear-eyed writer of Letters from an American, would like you to know that America is a survivor. Richardson chronicles recent events in her daily online newsletter, reaching over 1 million readers who are looking for a calm voice during stormy times. Thank you once again for joining us. Happy July 4th.